is that LK Mobile? For LZI. KI4LZI. Andy, you still on? F4ZLK. For ZLK.
KB4CPA.
You are? Should have called you too. I couldn't find what I needed at the first store, and there was another one not far, and I found it there. I'm headed home now.
Alright, so, how is, traffic out there?
Midhorse Road was pretty busy and kind of crazy, but I'm kind of back off on the side roads now. Forest Bridge 183, and it's not bad at all. And it just gets less and less traffic all the way home.
In Cleveland, South Carolina?
Right near, not far from Table Rock. I'm not far from Andy. Just on the other side of 11 from him, on the same side as Table Rock, and the Greenville side of Table Rock.
Well, I'll probably, so I can arrive by your place. I guess I can't see it from Highway 11, but I guess you get to it from Highway 11.
Go that way. I end up, the quickest way is going through Dacusville. And 135 down to Pumpkin Town, and then you get on 8 for just a little bit, and then there's a New Hope Road that cuts across. It crosses over 11 right there at Aunt Sue's. I live back there behind Aunt Sue's.
Aunt Sue's from Alabama. We used to do a... My girls used to do a kind of a limerick thing with that, and they had motions and took two people because you were slapping your hands together and doing different things. And I started doing it with one of my daughters, and we were standing in line at Carowinds, and everybody was freaking out that I knew the, you know, I knew that one. And here's this old guy doing something cool with his daughter.
A few of those with my girls a long time ago, but I couldn't do them now for sure.
Because I don't remember all the motions. They have to. I don't know if they do. I mean, dang, my oldest is 36, and my youngest is 30, so. And I just had a birthday on the 28th, so I'm a year older. I'm 67 now.
Hey, I missed that. I haven't been on the radio in a couple days, so happy birthday, David.
And they were going to take me out to breakfast. The family was, and one of the grandkids got sick, so now they're taking me out in the morning for breakfast, so for my birthday. So anyway, just another day. I guess, you know, age is, it's just all relative. Some things that you used to do, you can't do anymore.
Yeah, and when you're young, you look forward to birthdays and getting older and being able to do more stuff. And then at some point, you don't look forward to getting older where you can't do more stuff. You start being able to do less and less stuff.
My wife has a cow, and I get up on the roof, but... You know, that doesn't bother me at all. And it's not like we live in a two-story house or something. And but I can remember pulling in my grandmother's driveway. I think she was about 86, and she was up on the roof sweeping off the leaves in the eave of the house. But they collected, and she didn't want them to sit there and, you know, right out her shingles. And so I just very pulled up, and I got out, and I very nicely said, I said, if you'll get down from there, I'll finish that for you. So she did.
To see, probably wasn't a real high-pitched roof, but still, something about heights when you get older, it kind of, you don't do it very often, it's just not the same.
The only thing I can't do is look up. If I look up, I lose my orientation, and it's like, you know, I'll fall back, but so I just don't look up. I mean, I can look straight out and everything is fine, but if I try to look up at the sky, you know, if I hear a plane or something coming over, I have to be held numb some to do that. But other than that, I am very stable, and it doesn't bother me at all. So anyway, sometimes your brain, you know, your body or your mind says, you know, let's do this, and your brain says, you want to do what?
We used to work on a framing crew, and you start on the ground working your way up. It wasn't a big deal. You know, two or three stories up, you kind of got used to it as you went. But the roof I have now on the house we live in now is, I think it's a 12-12 pitch. It's really steep. And I just don't feel comfortable getting up on it. I've been up there with a rope and a climbing harness. But my son was there with me, too. He's a climber. And I was trying to go up there the other day just to throw a rope over and was just trying to hang on to the rope and clean off some of those leaves. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't take the step up there. When I didn't have a harness, I was just going to hold on to the rope, but I just couldn't do it.
Been on a roof that steep when I was young. I built a three-story house and right off of Cleveland Street, and it was one lot that hadn't been developed. And I remember we dug the footers by hand because they couldn't get a backhoe in there, and we hit red clay, and we were down, I don't know, 8 or 9 feet. I was throwing dirt at least 2 or 3 feet over my head, and I'm over 6 feet tall, and we were using a pickaxe because we were in you know, just red clay. It was hard as a brick, and so when we got we were putting the plywood up on the roof, and some, I don't know, for some reason they had to bring a circular saw there and cut part of it off. Some of the plywood, and they left the sawdust on the plywood, and I got in that sawdust and I started sliding, and I just happened to be on the edge of the roof, and I grabbed hold of the edge of the plywood. If not, I would have just slid right off the roof, and that would have been a three-story fall.
We were building a house one time off St. Mark's Road, and it had 9 foot walls on the basement and on the first floor, and the basement at the back of the house had a 4 foot crawl space. That's how steep the ground was. And then the second floor was 8 foot walls, and then it had a, you know, bunch of gables on the roof. And we were up, I was on the outside wall, we were putting a gable up, a ridge rafter, and the outside rafters, and one of the nails came loose, and the guy grabbed the board I was holding on to keep me from going completely over. And, you know, of course, I wasn't looking behind me. I was looking at him, but I knew that something had given away, but fortunately, he grabbed the other end of the board, and then we had to quit that day. We had to go home, so I couldn't do it anymore that day.
CPA. Well, I think this house could try to kill me because we were laying the floor, the plywood for the second floor, and going up the steps to your left was a huge opening, and two stories down because it was the first floor and then the basement, and then there was a big concrete slab down there where they were going to start building the chimney, and the chimney was coming up through there, through that opening. So it was going to be huge. And I had 2 half-inch sheets of plywood over my head, and when I got up those steps, you know, all we had on the second floor was plywood. We didn't have any walls up or anything. And the wind caught those plywood, and I had it leaning over to the left toward the opening, and it literally acted as a, like a kite or something, and the wind caught that plywood and was trying to lift me off the steps over into that open area, and I had to throw those sheets of plywood and grab hold of something, or I'd have went down, falling down on that concrete, and I know I'd have broke something doing that. So I'm just glad. I don't know what happened. I don't even remember what happened. Plywood, I think it landed in the basement.
Act like big sails when the wind. When the wind catches it. And since we're telling war stories, I'll tell you this one. Not really war stories, but we had stopped to talk. We were up on the second floor. We just had floor joists, and they were wide open. And I was standing on a 2x10 that was across a couple walls in between the floor joists. And we were talking, you know, had my arms crossed. We were just standing around talking for a few minutes. Went to go back to work, and I walked off the end of that 2x10, and it flipped up. Because it was the end was hanging over the one of the end of the wall, and it flipped up, and I looked down, and I'm going between two rafters or floor joists for the second floor, so I just opened my arms to catch myself and ended up breaking a rib. I had bruises on both sides under my arms, and I was pretty sore for a few days. I tried not to let my wife see that because she was always worried something would happen to me.
I can picture that, and I can see how that would hurt. I'm surprised you didn't break more than a rib, but anyway, at least you had the sense enough to put your arms out and catch yourself. And I tell you, and the only other thing that happened to that house was. I was standing there talking to the I guess you'd call him the contractor, the owner, the contractor who owned the business, the framing business that I was working for, and we all went to church together and all that, but I was working with his son. But he was there that day, the boss was there that day, and we were standing there on the back of the house on a scaffold talking, and a big blob of tar fell off the roof and right in the middle of my head and my hair. I had a big head of hair, and he had to spend about, I don't know, 23 minutes pouring gasoline on my hair to get that tar out of my hair. I'll never forget that. That gasoline, you know, just burning your skin. Oh, it was awful.
Okay, that's funny. You should have just shaved at that point.
He got it out. I don't know. He was really good to do that. And but yeah, that would have been probably the next thing is I would have gone somewhere and got a crew cut. But he did a good job, and I never will forget him. His name was Bud Kilby, and his son, Mike, still runs the business. I saw him a few years back. His office was right up the street from the church that I was working in. I was the minister of music at the church and associate pastor, actually. And anyway, and I saw Kilby on the sign, and I realized that's who it was. And so I went up there one day and spoke to him and caught up with him a little bit.
Had that gasoline smell on you for a while too, because I know gasoline evaporates pretty fast, but the smell kind of lingers.
I don't know if you can remember when the cars had the gas tank was behind the tag, and the tag was spring loaded. You pulled the tag down, you took the cap off, and stuck the nozzle in, and you know, the nozzle and the, all that hardware where the trigger was for the, to see the gas in, all that held the tag down. You could lock it in place, and usually, you know, the hose would, the nozzle would stay in the tank, and because it had a spring thing wrapped around it, and but I have had either the nozzle come out or the, or it didn't cut off, and I was sitting there holding the trigger, and the gas came splashing out all over my legs and just soaked me all the way to the skin from my knees up to my waist on my pants. And man, you talking about something burning, it just burnt like fire. That was, and that was leaded gasoline back then.
I remember those cars, we had a couple of them that were like that. And I remember leaded gasoline. I remember when they'd start asking you at the station, do you want leaded or unleaded?
Because some people would get the unleaded and they didn't need it, but they thought it was better gas because it would cost more. So they would get the unleaded because, you know, they thought they were getting a better quality gas for their car. And really, if it was an old car, it needed the lead, so they were really doing their engine a disservice.
They've come a long way with the fuel, for sure. I don't know. But I do remember there was a Texaco station right there at Saluda Dam and Whitehorse back in the 70s when we lived out off Forest Bridge Road, and we'd pull in there and the guy would come out, check your oil, wash your windows off, pump your gas. You just sit in the car and he'd ask you what you wanted. I actually delivered to him, and he'd retired. He lived there on Saluda Dam. He said he used to own that Texaco station. He had I think he's dead now, but this was, goodness, been 20 years ago when I was delivering to him. But he had a really nice garden right there on the, as soon as you turn on Saluda Dam, about a quarter mile down the road on the left, he had a lot of property and a big garden every year.
I think I remember that because we used to live in those townhouses down there on the right, just past Truth Missionary Church. And he was down below the highway department there on the left. Is that what you're talking about?
I passed the highway department a couple houses down and kind of had a big field there and a big brick house that kind of set back a little bit.
Remember the house that had the driveway that had the big brick columns there on the left, just below him? I don't know, but I was told that the house had an airstrip behind it.
I never saw anything, but it's possible because I never went back in the back of that house.
We were driving by there, you know, when we lived there, down below there. It was all grown up, and it was really hard to even see the house, I think, if I remember correctly. But I think my daughter, we gave her her first flight lesson for her 14th birthday. She wanted to get her pilot's license at the time. And so we paid for the first lesson, and the lady flew her over that area and circled back. And she said she saw a runway, and I wonder if it was the same one. And there may not be one back there. That's just what I was told, and who knows? You know, people tell you stuff. But there, that's one thing they teach you when you're flying. I've been told that you're always looking for a place to land, because you never know when that engine is going to quit on you.
Okay, yeah, I've heard that too. You're always looking around just in case, especially the smaller planes. Anyway, we, back early 70s, 1974, 75, something like that, we were on our way to church, and we were crossing that bridge there at the dam, and it was snowy and icy, and this car came around the corner and hit that bridge and started sliding back and forth, slammed into the front of our little van, one of those old 1960s flat nose van, and the windshield popped out. My brother went flying out and landed on the railing there on that bridge. Almost went over, but he didn't. And he was probably 11, 12 years old at the time. Anyway, I can still see that car sliding back and forth in my mind. And that was, 1975, I think. Anyway, Dave, I'm here at the house. I appreciate the ride along and hope you have a good evening and Happy New Year. And we'll talk to you again. KP4CBA from N4ZLK.
Shane, well, my gosh, that had to have been scary. I bet that scared the heck out of him, landing on that railing, because that was that bridge is up high off the water down there. And then there's a railroad trestle just below it. And I think my dad and I went fishing down there one time there under the bridge. Anyway, all right, well, 73's glad you made it safely, and have a good evening and have a good New Year's. And we'll talk to you later. Good to talk with you, Shane. N4ZLK, this is KB4CBA 73.
N4ZLK.
B4GMA, this is KO4ULP. B4GMA, this is KO4ULP. B4ULP, monitoring. B4ULP, monitoring.